Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Earth Week, everybody. In case you've forgotten, though I've reminded listeners, everybody, you all, a number of times, if you want to qualify to win a free trash picker and join me on my daily, commitment to keep my neighborhood and our hiking trails and the Hank Aaron State Trail clean, go ahead and text us. Name, email, cell phone number, use the app, and you will qualify to win one of the three trash pickers we're giving away on the show. Also, don't go anywhere. We're going to be giving away some Brewers tickets. These will be tickets for Saturday's game against the Yankees. That one kicks off at 6:10 p.m. But right now, it is my distinct pleasure to have two of my good friends join me to talk about how we as individuals and Wisconsinites can stay true to what has always been a long tradition in Wisconsin, and that is one of deep reverence for the outdoors. It's our playground for almost all of us growing up and our commitment to conservation here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm joined this half hour by Corey Redeh White, the Center for Climate Integrity, and Dean Muller, who heads up the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice Organization. Welcome, gentlemen, and happy Friday.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Maggie.
So glad to have you both. Corey, I want to start with you. Let's start with the very basics. What is the Center for Climate Integrity? And I know that you are their managing attorney over there, and you've been doing some really special work. So what is the CCI, and what is the work that you've spent the last number of years of your life focused on?
Yeah, thanks. CCI is a 501c3 nonprofit, and our mission is to empower communities and elected officials with the knowledge and tools they need to hold the oil and gas corporations accountable for their decades of lying about climate pollution. So basically, CCI is here to tell the story of big oil's decades of deception and why they now need to be held accountable.
Yesterday on the show, I was previewing for folks our conversation, and I said, I've had a little experience litigating against massive corporations that lie to people about the dangers that their products produce and the lives that they can take. In the form of the opioid lawsuits that my county brought back in 2018. I also likened the lawsuits that CCI is helping to bring to the lawsuits brought against big tobacco. In other words, this isn't about saying we should never use oil or any fossil fuels. There's no way we can flip a switch tomorrow and do that. We're not yet there from an infrastructure perspective. But what this is about is the fact that big oil knew for decades that fossil fuel usage would have big impacts on public health, on the health of me and you and our families, our listeners' families. And they lied about it often and repeatedly. Am I getting that mostly right? That's what happened here.
That's exactly right, Maggie. These cases are really about accountability. They're about us saying we as consumers and as a society don't like being lied to. And if you do lie and then create a mess, it's basic kindergarten rules, you clean it up. So it's not about ending any industry. It's about making sure that we can make informed decisions and that those that have caused harm are held accountable for it.
Can you give our audience and me as well some examples of the big old fatty lies that have been told by big oil, whether it's to Congress in the form of congressional testimony and the way that they've advertised their products, so that people have a sense of how big the lie actually has been?
Yeah, it's not just big. It's that it's been going on for decades. You know, Exxon and the other giant oil and gas corporations, they had some of the best scientists in the world on their staff in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And API, working in concert with Stanford University in the 60s, they were doing studies on what would happen when we used their fossil fuel products. They were studying what they called then the greenhouse gas effect. And if you look at the documents that were hidden for a long while, but have been uncovered in the last decade by investigative journalists, they show exactly what these scientists were saying to the executives. Again, way back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And it was startling when you look back now at how accurate the scientists were. It was back in the late 70s, they predicted what the parts per million of CO2 would be in the year 2000. And they got within one part per million. So they knew at the
Wait. Run that past us all again.
Yeah. Exxon scientists over 20 years beforehand could predict that at the current rate of our usage of their product, that we would be at X part per million of CO2. I think it was 300 and something. And when you look back at what the parts per million of carbon dioxide was in our atmosphere in the year 2000, it was just one part per million away. So they knew the impact. And these reports, these documents, they say things like can cause catastrophic changes, catastrophic impacts, sea level rise, wildfire, drought, flooding, all the things that we're seeing right now, decades ago, they knew would happen. But again, instead of telling us that, so we could make an informed decision about the products we buy, about how we build out our infrastructure, how we heat our homes, how we market our cars. Instead of that, they launched this campaign of deception, the likes of which we really have never seen before. And API, the trade association, was also at the heart of this.
For everybody out there, I had to quickly Google to be sure I was getting it right. I thought it was the American Petroleum Institute. And indeed, that is the API of which you refer, Corey, correct?
That's right. And they have long been at the heart of really all public marketing for the fossil fuel industry, along with private firms like McKinsey and others, and also lobbying on their behalf on the Hill. So there's a memo that goes by the name of the Victory Memo that came out in 1998 that API distributed to their members, the fossil fuel companies, that said victory will be achieved when the average citizen understands the uncertainty of climate science. Now, this is the science they'd been certain about for decades. They say they're
so certain that they got within one part per billion when they were projecting about whatever it was 25 years ahead.
Yep, CO2 parts per million. Yep. Their victory in their campaign would be achieved when we all thought that science was uncertain. So this is really the campaign they launched. It was denial at first and highlighting this uncertainty. And now denial is not so in vogue anymore, but what we're seeing is greenwashing tactics. They continue to not take accountability for what they knew when, and instead now say they're going to be a part of the solution when really there's no reason to believe that they are.
And greenwashing is basically putting on the veneer of concern over the impacts of fossil fuels while continuing more or less business as usual. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely. Yeah. Exxon for years, I think a lot of us saw the ads on TV, marketed this new algae, this new form of energy through algae that was going to really save the world. And then they just quietly pulled the plug on the whole thing because it never was going to work. They spent a few million on that, but instead are spending billions on continuing to expand their excavation of the fossil fuels. So it is about giving this sense that we're doing the right thing and you can trust us, when in reality, the money and the actions say quite the opposite.
One of the things, Corey, that I wanted to ask you, and Dean, don't worry, I'm getting to you because we want to bring it local, let everybody out there know about what's going on here in Wisconsin. But I wanted to ask you, Corey, about one of the... what I think is probably the second most successful marketing tactic deployed by big oil, other than maybe it's not a real thing. And that is that every single one of you out there, you're the reason that we're having climate instability. You're the reason that conservation isn't working in Wisconsin. You're the reason that we're having flooding, because you're not managing your carbon footprint. Yes. I'm sure there are a few, all of us are nodding at the rate. Yes, I worry about my carbon footprint and my plastic straws. Who actually came up with that idea of the carbon footprint?
BP, along with
British Petroleum, yes.
British Petroleum, along with FTI or one of the other big marketing firms that's done the PR work for this industry. Yeah, I mean, it was oil companies themselves saying we had to watch our carbon footprint. And it was very effective campaign. It really taps into our sense of responsibility and internalized guilt. But all the while, they were ensuring that we really had very little option but to use their products.
Yeah, it's brilliant marketing, because at base, first, no, it's not really a real thing. Don't pay any attention to it. But if you do think it's a real thing, then it's really your responsibility and we're just fine over here. Don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain shtick. I mean, that's really what it is. I don't mean to suggest by any stretch everybody is, I'm suggesting people text in to get qualified for a trash picker, that we shouldn't all do everything that we can individually, and that embracing our individual responsibilities and recycling and leaving no footprint when we enjoy the great outdoors here in the state, that those things aren't important. They are. That we need to be mindful of what we're consuming, especially when we talk about fish. We could have a whole show on plastic waste and plastic netting and all of that kind of stuff. But the reality is that the idea of an individual's measurable carbon footprint, and that somehow you, an individual, by managing your carbon footprint, will somehow turn back the tide of climate instability, is simply untrue. And it was created to distract from the enormous scaled impact of big oil. Bottom line facts. You've been advancing some of the lawsuits that we've seen in California and Colorado to help hold big oil accountable for the knowing lies that they've told for decades. What are some of the claims, Corey, that we can see in those lawsuits?
Yeah. And just to make one point clear, Maggie, I myself and CCI, we don't litigate any of these cases. We don't represent any of the parties. We follow the cases closely, and we like to talk about them and certainly encourage folks to learn more about them. But I am not speaking on behalf of any of the parties here. So the cases were first filed in 2017, like I said, in the wake of the publishing of these internal documents, and with the attribution science that Dr. Rick Heaty had really just come out with. They are putting forth public nuisance claims, other tort claims, product liability claims, and even consumer protection claims. So it looks a lot like the tobacco litigation and more recently the opioid litigation, both in terms of the fact pattern and the legal claims being brought.
Thanks much. We're going to take a quick breath here. We're going to come back. I'm going to ask my friend Dean Muller some questions about what's going on right here in our backyard in Wisconsin with the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice organization that Dean leads up. Don't go anywhere, anybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've got a question or a comment, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752. I don't know about you all, but that's what I think. This makes no sense at all. How do the richest corporations in the world get away with lying to us for decades, killing us with tobacco, opioids, and extraordinary changes in our environment that we need to live and get away with it for so long? I've got two great experts and friends here to help us all try to understand. Corey Rede White of the Center for Climate Integrity, as well as Dean Muller, who heads up the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice Group. Welcome again, gentlemen. Dean, so glad to have you join us.
Thank you for having me.
Who is the Wisconsin for Environmental Injustice Group, and what are you all about?
Well, it's an organization certainly based here in Wisconsin. It's a grassroots organization. We organized a short time ago, about 2 years ago, as a formal 501c3. And basically, our goal here is to establish a statewide coalition of individuals and groups. The groups could be social justice groups, faith groups, youth groups. You know, the people like to hunt and fish, snowmobile, the farmers, certainly environmental groups, et cetera, bringing them into a strong coalition that would focus basically, as I see it, on two things. One is to improve the understanding and awareness in the population of the connection between climate change and fossil fuel. Some of the data shows us that you know, like 70, this is statewide data. So, you know, it varies a little bit by county, but approximately 70% of the population feels that there is such a thing as climate change. And then when you look, ask the question of, well, what's causing that, the number goes down a bit. So in other words, most people think, well, this is just a seasonal type thing. You know, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the hottest summer ever. Extraordinarily warm winter, you know, the warmest February ever. I mean, we hear this again and again, and we live in Wisconsin. We like to enjoy the outdoors all year round, but certainly during the summer, and we had to spend a good deal of time indoors because the air was too bad to breathe. So, I mean, I don't know
about you, Dean. I don't ever remember seeing actual, like, haze and smoke for days in Wisconsin.
It was awful.
That was a new one for me. So something's different.
Exactly.
So right.
Maggie, it's kind of in our face. It's to that extent. And of course, when we have these recreational events like Lake Winnebago and the sturgeon spearfishing, you know, didn't happen this year. They were struggling to do the Berkey. And
I was just going to say the Berkebiner. I had my cross country skis all ready to go for about a mile. That's all I can do is about a mile.
And then you have these folks that are involved in tourism up north asking the state for assistance, right? Because they have a significant shortfall because the winter was so short. And of course, we don't want to just look at necessarily tourism, but, you know, winter is like, you know, things need to go to sleep for a while. And if we as humans don't have a good night's sleep, we don't function as well the next day. Right. So it's the same thing with plants and animals and so forth. It was a short winter and it wasn't long and hard enough by any stretch of the imagination.
That's okay, Dean. To that point, we had on just this past Monday, Dr. Ann Getson, who's a family physician who started to focus her practice to help the families that she serves here in Wisconsin, to help all of us understand how environmental changes are impacting our families' lives. She spoke a good bit about different vectors within our ecosystems and the fact that with generally warmer winters, especially this past winter, we can expect increasing levels of Lyme disease, which has now spread almost to epidemic levels across the state because the various ticks that carry Lyme disease aren't getting deeply frozen out.
I was just spending some time we had out of town guest, a niece of mine who is a long termer as far as Lyme disease is concerned. So it is a reality. It is a disease. And there's many other diseases we can talk about, the mercury from the coal burning and the other metals that come out of those smokestacks are just, you know, another example. And then the thing that, you know, motivated me to pursue this along with others is the fact that Wisconsin has such a rich environmental history. And I mean, Gaylord Nelson is the founder of Earth Day, the thing we celebrate and enjoy. And we use that as kind of an effort to reconnect with the environment and to jumpstart our efforts to preserve the environment. And there's just so many overlapping injustices that we confront when we look closely at this problem. I mean, there's certainly a lot to it. And of course, one of the things that we're certainly advocating for, and we're essentially one of the few organizations in Wisconsin that do this, because there are a lot of other great organizations that do a lot of the good things with respect to the environment. But ours is our single laser focus is litigation. We want the Attorney General to begin litigation against the fossil fuel industry. And we want to also encourage cities and counties across the state to do this as well, because nationally, you know, a 30 political entities have done this, and a third of them are counties, and a third of them are cities, and a third of them are states. So we need to join this effort, you know, and have it be a broad-based effort here in Wisconsin is our goal.
One of the ways that I like to think about this and share with people and try to hear what's on people's minds is, whether you're an outdoors person, right, hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, cross-country skiing, being just a mile and then I'm gassed, or you have a family farm, or you raise livestock here in the state, whether your family earns its living from tourism, whether you've seen health impacts, all of these different ways of approaching this problem, we're going to do this together here in the state of Wisconsin. Again, I believe that as a value, conservation and caring about our outdoors is part of our DNA here. It's part of our shared values. And it's so important for people to understand nobody is, again, advocating us for us to give up our cars. This isn't a thing.
No, you're absolutely right.
And livestock or at farming. No, we just want to try to do this in a way that works for everybody.
Right. I mean, the slogan, the world, the America runs on Duncan. No, the world runs on fossil fuel. That's the reality. It affects everything. The clothes we wear, the food we eat, the fallout from that is in our bodies, in our air, and in the water we drink, etc. But the point is, yeah, we need energy. We need energy companies, but we need clean energy, and that transition needs to happen, and it needs to happen soon. I often, when I give speeches, I qualify myself by saying all the things that I'm not. I'm not an attorney like you two guys are. I'm just old. I'm old. That's all I am, and concerned. And I'm trying to make a difference. We all have a generation behind us that we know and love. My granddaughters, the kid next door, the kid across the world, and that's what we're trying to do, is to create a better world. In the direction we're going now.
Thanks so much. My guest this half hour, Dean Muller, who heads up the Wisconsin for Environmental Justice, as well as Corey Rede White from the Center for Climate Integrity. Thanks so much for being here, gentlemen. The last thing I'll say is, if we don't start to get on board with how to hold corporations that lie to us accountable, ultimately the people that pay are taxpayers. It is me and it is you, and it's every single one of our families. Happy Earth Week to you both, gentlemen. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time this Friday afternoon. Have a wonderful weekend. Everybody stay put. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got some WIAA sports updates coming up just after these quick messages. What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I have been promising all show to give away a couple of Brewers tickets, but we're going to do it based on a wee bit of trivia. I thought, what better trivia than to ask some baseball trivia about one of my most favorite Brewers pitchers of all time. I got to grow up watching this guy pitch, and he is unforgettable. I was fortunate enough to meet him a couple of times in Arizona, which was a wonderful treat. It's, of course, the incomparable Raleigh Figures. You can't forget that mustache. I mean, that is a stash if you're talking about stashes. So here are the various, you got to answer all three questions correctly. What year was he born? What year did he win the American League MVP, and what teams did Raleigh Fingers play for? If you call in with the correct answers to all three of those Raleigh Finger trivia questions, you will get two wonderfully delightful, excellent tickets to the Brewers game against the New York Yankees this Saturday, that means tomorrow at 6:10. Again, the questions are, what year was he born? And Anya, don't worry, I'll actually give you the answers.
Thank you so much.
What year was he born? What year did he win the American League MVP? And what MLB teams did Raleigh Fingers play for? Those are your three questions. Go ahead, give Anya a call if you would like to win two Brewers tickets to Saturday's game. I'm going to have to do like three things at once and text you the answers and ask my next wonderful guest, the incomparable Jimmy Kaska of Civic Media fame. Welcome back, Jimmy. We talked a little bit about a huge vote happening in the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association about extending name, image, and likeness rights. In other words, the ability to sell or contract and get money for those to high school athletes. The WIAA took a big vote this week. What happened, Jimmy?
Well, this week, the WIAA at its annual meeting, the membership voted it down 219 to 170. So 170, yes, 219, no. That measure did not pass. And as a result, the amendment that would have both changed the amateur status for student athletes, the guidelines for that, as well as a constitutional amendment for the WIAA, well, they're not happening, at least this year.
It's a pretty momentous decision. I got to say, I was pretty surprised to hear that given the legal wrangling and the legal stress that the NCAA has been under. Just in February, another element of the NCAA's NIL program has been challenged and there's been an injunction put in place. I may get to some of the detail on that, but what was going on? Why didn't they vote for it? I was kind of surprised. I mean, they had been told more or less that, well, if you don't vote for this, there's going to be some sort of lawsuit.
Yeah, exactly. Right at the beginning of the presentation, they had their legal counsel come out and say flat out, like, hey, this is something that's going through courts, not at the high school level right now, but definitely at the NCAA level. Because right now, 31 states do allow for NIL, including three of our border states here in Wisconsin. So the going in a couple of weeks ago, the general feeling, the vibes, if you will, were that this was going to pass and pass relatively easily. But then in the last couple of weeks, there were really a few things that happened kind of leading up to this. About 2 weeks ago, most of the athletic director associations around Wisconsin had their area meetings. And at those meetings, they took straw polls and sought more information on what was actually happening. So before those meetings, most people generally understood the amendment language, right? The specific amendment language that was permitting these things. But what a lot of people didn't fully grasp going into that, and this is based on conversations with about a dozen athletic directors around the state, both in northern Wisconsin and here in southern Wisconsin, where I live, and over there in southeastern Wisconsin, talking about the changes to the amateur status, like what is actually allowed with NIL, who is actually allowed to give money to student athletes. And this kind of spooked some of the administrators. And in the straw poll, about three quarters of them said they needed more information before making a vote. And that's a staggeringly high number of people saying we need more information. To the WIAA's credit, they actually went forward and they held a couple of Zoom calls trying to inform people about the changes and talk more about it. So to their credit, they did that. But that straw poll a couple of weeks ago at a lot of the area meetings, I think, got some people talking and thinking about it. And I think another circumstance, another thing that really changed in leading up to it, about a week before the vote, TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, they started publishing content and doing interviews talking about NIL. So then this becomes kind of public discourse. And I think there was some public pressure about this. People started picking sides, and you know how it gets with any issue. And yep. I think that too played a big part.
It, again, really fascinating. I would have thought, perhaps you should prepare yourself, do a little reading ahead of such an important vote. I don't really like to vote based on vibes. But again, to the extent that people felt like they didn't have enough information, I got to give them credit for hitting pause and thinking through it. I've got to assume that there's going to be a lawsuit filed pretty in fairly short order, because Wisconsin's always had some pretty big marquee high school athletes. We've got very robust programs in lacrosse, tennis, football, track and field, right? Volleyball, and of course, basketball. I would expect to see a lawsuit. Do you think that that's likely? Are people talking about that? Did they seem concerned about that?
Well, we can look just last night at the NFL draft. We had a Wisconsin native that was drafted number 7 overall, J.C. Latham. So you know, we do have big high profile student athletes in Wisconsin. You know, you mentioned a bit about kind of the leading into it, and during the discussion on right before the vote, they had three athletic directors come up and speak, and all of them were seeking more information. One athletic director said that they needed more community input, because going beyond the walls of the school, they had to educate public about this. They don't want to have student athletes be ineligible because someone gives them money and then gives the school money. And that's a no-no in this arrangement, in this setup. But one thing I heard from one athletic director, unnamed, who texted me, you know, he texts me and he says, hey, WIAA board members addressing competitive balance today reaffirmed that things were looked at in totality or broadly. AKA Vibes. So,
Vibes.
But Mel Dow, the associate director for the WIAA, said on the WISports.net podcast last week that they did expect that if the amendment, that even without the amendment, that there would be some kind of either legislation or litigation that would lead to us having NIL in Wisconsin, maybe perhaps even this year. So that is something that they certainly expect there.
Well, you know, it would be par for the course, and you don't have to respond to this. This is just me doing commentary. Be par for the course for the Republican Assembly to get really moving on the existential question of NIL rights for high school athletes in Wisconsin while letting early childhood education and childcare die on the vine, not getting the PFAS money out of the Joint Finance Committee. You know, priorities and things. I digress. Listen, this half hour, I've got my guest, Jimmy Koska, wonderful friend of the show, Civic Media's own. We're talking about the WIAA's recent ruling on NIL rights, name, image, and likeness rights for high school athletes. We're also giving away this half hour, if you call us, 855-752-4842. Two tickets to tomorrow's 6:10 Brewers game against the Yankees. To get the tickets, there's no magic caller number. You just have to know three little trivia facts. All about my favorite Brewers pitcher, Raleigh Fingers. You got to know the year that he won the AL MVP. You got to know the year that he was born and the teams that he played for. I'll give you a hint. He only played for three teams. Again, that is the year he won the AL MVP, the year Mr. Fingers was born, and the three teams he played for. I do have a signed picture of Raleigh Fingers, I have to say. I'm very, very proud of that one. In fact, it is in my Civic Media office. Dun, dun, dun. If you're ever in town, Jimmy, you can cruise on by, check out the Raleigh Fingers signed autographed photo. Still sporting the mustache these many years later, I might add, because I'm sure
the bobblehead of him up there somewhere in the massive Brewers bobblehead. There's one up there somewhere.
I love it. Listen, I know some people are massive bobblehead collectors, and I'm not going to knock it. Not my favorite thing, but I always know somebody who wants the bobblehead, so I always get them and then re-gift, right? But I did keep one bobblehead. It is, I'm gonna let you guess, Jimmy. It's not Raleigh Fingers, I'll give you a hint, but from that era.
Gotcha. Okay.
You want to guess which one it is?
I'm going to guess Paul Molitor. That's a very popular pick from that era.
That would be probably number three, but it's not it. It's the guy that makes lemonade. Robin Yount. Awesome. Robin Yount's lemonade. That, by the way, delicious summer lemonade, especially with a little spot of Tito's vodka. Neither are sponsors of the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm just talking about stuff that I like to drink in the summer. But yes, I kept the Robin Yount bobblehead. I was five when the 82 Brewers went on their streak. Yes, I stood in line for a burger for free at George Webb.
That's awesome. I'm sure I had a 50-50 shot at that, by the way, and I didn't get it. So
yeah, it's basically
It's one of two others. If it's not really, you have two other choices, and
Robin Yount or Paul Molitor. I've met Jimmy Gantner. He's now a coach for the Brewers. That's big fun. Watch Paul Molitor with my dad in Old County Stadium rip a walk-off grand slam home run in the gap between the left field bleachers and where the foul line post was. If you had spent time in County Stadium, there was a big gap. It didn't connect. And he parked one right into the gap. That was probably one of the most intense moments of pure joy, other than winning a rugby national championship, that I've ever shared with my dad. It was just unadulterated joy. Again, you want to win those two Brewers tickets for tomorrow game versus the Yankees at 6:10 p.m. You can text or call Anya. Tell us the year Raleigh Fingers won the AL MVP, the year he was born, and the three teams he played for. Wanted to take an opportunity, Jimmy, since I've got you, to ask your opinion. It does relate, of course, to these name, image, and likeness legal changes, both in the NC2A and now potentially in the WIAA. Big news this past week. Reggie Bush was returned his Heisman Trophy. He won the Heisman back in, let me see if I get this year right. I'm blanking on the year. I believe it was like 2003, I think, and it was taken from him, or he had to turn it over back over to folks in 2010. 2005. I've got it. Got it. It got his 2005 Heisman Trophy back this week. What do you think? Good idea or bad idea?
I think it's right in their statement that there's a real changing landscape in terms of college athletics that I think when you look at things in hindsight, if you have the ability to do something as simple as make a different decision based on how things have changed, I'm fine with it. I mean, honestly, the way things were even then, I college athletics has always kind of had this happen, right? There's always been some story about someone getting benefits or whatever. I mean, it's really no secret. Nobody really wants to talk about it. There's not, it's a lot of anecdotes and things like that, but man, this stuff has existed forever. This is nothing new. So him getting it back is just fine.
Well, it's so interesting to me, not only because of course now college athletes can sell their name, image, and likeness, but the very legal dispute that's sort of bogging down the NCAA is about boosters and boosters giving gifts, money, et cetera, to induce players to come to school, the booster relationship, all that stuff, which was the core. And a judge has said, hey, you can't regulate that. That's an antitrust violation. That was what Reggie got popped for. He had a car and got a couple grand, which you look back at it, it's like, oh, isn't that quaint? It's like worrying about, Donald Trump paid off a porn star. Isn't that quaint? Because we have other problems now. In any case, thanks so much, Jimmy, for keeping us up to date about the WIAA rule consideration. Always fun. Will you come back? Let's talk about baseball. The draft. We could talk about the draft. I'm a sports nerd. I don't know if all of our good friends out there love it, but I sure can riff on some sports for a while.
Oh, man, sports tie in with culture, even here in Wisconsin. I mean, the Packers are everywhere, the Brewers, the Bucks. I mean, anytime you want me here, I'm here. So
that's awesome. I always tell people my 80-year-old mother knows the rules of football and yells at the television set. That's how much sports are in Wisconsin culture. Thanks so much, Jimmy Koska, Civic Media's own, for joining me this segment to chat a little WIAA legal wrangling. I'm Maggie Dawn. Don't go anywhere. Got a few parting good news pieces for all of us to end our week with. We'll be back with more in just a moment. I'm telling these tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Happy Friday. No more bad news. I'm over it. Just good news for the rest of the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're giving away a pair of Brewers tickets. Brewers versus the Yanks tomorrow, 6:10 p.m. at AmFam Field. Two tickets to the person who knows the answer to three trivia questions. And we have a contestant that I think I know. Is this Doc?
Yeah.
Are you there? Hey, hon, how are you?
I'm well, Sister Soldier. How are you?
I'm really good. So here, I'm going to ask you the three questions. First question, what year did Raleigh Fingers win the American League MVP?
That would be 1981.
Excellent. Ding, ding, ding. What year was he born?
1946.
That's two for two. And the final question, what three teams did Raleigh play in the majors for?
That would be Oakland, Milwaukee, and San Diego.
We have a winner, ladies and gentlemen. No better gentleman than to get these tickets than my good... Oh, love it. No better guy to get the tickets than my good friend, Doc. I've been thinking about you, friend. Really great to hear from you. Enjoy the game this weekend.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it. Yeah, take care, hon. It's always fun to give away things. You've got about, 8 minutes to get your last texts in to qualify for the Trash Pickers here celebrating Earth Week long programming. Let's keep our communities clean. I hate the trash. I hate the littering. There's three trash pickers up for giveaways. Just use the app. Text Anya. Tell her you're here for the picker. Give her your name, email, and cell phone number. We'll let you know sometime between this afternoon and Monday if you are one of the winners. I wanted to share a bit of extraordinarily uplifting news. If I've got time, I'll get to two bits of it. Also wanted to say big love and speedy recovery to Terry Barr, who usually joins us for Local and Overlooked. Not feeling so great, Terry. We love you. Get well soon. We hope she'll be back next week to do, again, our favorite Friday segment, Local and Overlooked. Steve Jensen on Facebook reminding me that he also won the Cy Young on the same year that he won the MVP. Indeed, it won't totally overwhelm people. But yes, that's how good of a player Raleigh Fingers was. Again, one of my baseball heroes. Got to meet him a couple of times. They were highlights. Met him once. I'll do a little tangent before the really, really good news. Met him once in Tucson, actually Merivale Stadium, Brewer Spring Training Facility, with my dear friend Shannon. She had come down. We took a drive down from Tucson, which is where I usually go in the spring. And it was hot that day. So hot, you know, when you're drinking the Miller Lights, there's basically like no amount of Miller Light that you can drink to even catch the slightest beer buzz because you're just sweating it right out. Anyway, Shasha and I, we got to meet Mr. Fingers. We got a couple of fun pictures there. Look a little droopy because of the heat, but Raleigh, he had that mustache intact, twirled up into perfection as he always did every time he took the field. Here's the great news I wanted to share with you. A little bit of a restoring our faith in humanity. Found out, and this is just in a neighboring state, so local-ish, that you might not have heard about. It's happened this past week in St. Paul, Minnesota, on I-94, which we're all super familiar with. Apparently, an older gentleman who's driving an SUV got into some kind of an accident, and his SUV ended up bursting into flames on the side of the road. And like 10 people got pulled over, got out of their cars and engaged it. There's a video of it. Somebody had a dash mounted camera that just runs all the time. And so it caught most of this on tape. There are just people running over to this burning car, which in my head, I'd be thinking this thing might blow up any second, and trying to wrench open the driver and back doors because it was like wedged up against the guardrail, and they were going after it. It was absolutely incredible. Some of the heroes of that story, Kadir Tulla from St. Paul, Lacey Kramer. I mean, just incredible. Everybody, according to Mr. Tulla, everybody was trying their best to get this man out of the car. It was people risking their life to save another. One man started spraying a fire extinguisher. Tulla grabs like debris from the side and tries cracking open the window. It was just incredible. Good news here. The driver, identified as Samuel Obrovich, 71, a St. Paul resident, he was fine. They got him out of the car. He was transported to the hospital. No serious injuries. Everybody was okay. Like, shoo. Here's what Mr. Obrovich had to say. I am alive today because several good Samaritans and professional first responders saved my life. Fred Rogers used to say that whenever someone sees something scary, look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping. That is my bit of good news for all of you out there rolling into this weekend. Sometimes our weeks of news are hard. I'm here to share them with you. I'm here to process some of it. But most of all, I think we're here to try to help each other when we see something scary. Seems that there's a lot of that these days. And remember, everybody, I will stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together. We will revisit the Supreme Court decision next week. I know everybody's still trying to get their head around it. I know I am. More to share. Go check out that op-ed. You can find it at civicmedia.us. Sign up for our newsletters and our podcasts. Again, my pleasure to work with each and every one of you all week long. Have a wonderful weekend. That's it for me. Last Friday episode of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Radio Network. We'll be back on Monday. Keep on running, 'cause the winner don't quit on themselves.